Give me one, Jody.
Okay.
I don't care what. Okay, I'm going to call us back to order. Do I have a quorum? Randy's out there. And so we have a quorum. Next item on our, oh, I guess I need to say that it's 3:15. And the next item on our agenda is the part that we left off for the health benefit report. So Jason, you have the floor.
Yes, ma'am, I'd like to defer to Derek and Brenda. Are you still on the line?
Yes, we are, Jason.
Okay. Could you go ahead and introduce yourself again, and then we can begin, please? Thank you.
Absolutely. Good afternoon. My name is Derek Sheldorf, and with me is Brenda O'Neill from United American Insurance Company. We are the underwriter for the Osage Nation retiree health plan, supplemental to Medicare, Plan F. And we also partner with Express Scripts, Inc. for the Medicare Part D prescription drug program available to elders of the Osage Nation. So what you are looking at on your screen, what I'm sharing with you, is a quarterly report that is provided to the nation that shows activity by month each quarter, that shows the active number of enrollees on a monthly basis, how many members were added that month and how many were canceled. It also shows the amount of premium billed for those members, whether they are on a go-forward basis or a retroactive basis, an enrollment was retroactive. It's worth noting that the nation on the medical plan F pays the premium on an annualized basis for each member. So a lump sum for majority of the in-force members are paid at the beginning of the year. And then as enrollment activity takes place over the course of the year, United American bills the nation for those new enrollments as they come in on a monthly basis. So that's what this report, the top section of this report, is showing. You can see as of June, there were 1,257 elders in the program. 8 were added and 7 were canceled. And that could be due to death or other various reasons for cancellation. The bottom section of the report shows essentially the same information. The Part D program is handled a little bit differently than the medical in that the Osage Nation pays premium for all members on a monthly basis rather than on an annual basis, which is how it's paid to United American. And you can see the activity in the program with those numbers at the bottom, as well as the premium billed for each of those months. So, this, like I said, this is provided quarterly to the nation. Happy to answer any questions about the report itself or about the retiree health program or Part D program as it stands today. So Jason, unless there's any other questions, is there anything else you need from us today?
No, I don't believe so. Madam Chair, have we got any questions on any of the report that we just described?
Well, I'm just taking a look here for just a second. You know, usually there's not. This is a fixed rate. Anybody else see anything they want to ask about? I think I'm good.
Chair, I have a question.
Congresswoman Rebard.
Yes, thank you. Can you describe just a little bit about maybe why we had the added members and maybe why we had members cancel? And I understand that, you know, if they passed away, of course, there'd be a cancellation. But do we see members moving, you know, like throughout the year, they're eligible to move from the our $500 plan, right? And then when they become of age, they can move into these two different plans. Would that be a reason to have our added members? Is it just because that's they've met that age limit, or maybe they find Correct. That this is a better service to them?
So this program is supplemental to Medicare, and typically Medicare takes effect when someone reaches age 65. And so as part of this program, there are enrollment packets that are mailed to elders that are turning 65 on a monthly basis. So new enrollments into the program are likely attributable to people that are aging into Medicare and have a need for this benefit at the time they enroll in Medicare
retire.
Second tab of the report here shows cancellation details. So it shows each of the cancellations that we have recorded on this report and identifies the reason for the cancellation. So most of them are due to death. Some of them voluntarily cancel out of the program for reasons that we don't track. We were just notified to take them out of the program.
Okay, Chair, if I may.
Yes.
I just thought, you know, because we're privy to look at this document and our constituents that may be listening or not, you know, I don't know that this information is shared with the public or not, but with the report you're giving then on the Plan F, it's showing that as of June, we had 1,257 active members with 8 added and 7 canceled. And then on our Part D for the prescriptions, as of June, we had 1,078 with 8 added members and 2 canceled members. And I just think that's, you know, something that we'd like to share with our folks that are listening. So that's it. Thank you for the report.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Congressman Big Horse.
Yes, I just had a question. They're putting some new plans out, and I was just wondering if United American would be looking at the new plan C, I guess is what they're calling it. I know we have the plan F, which is the Advantage, but they're also calling this plan C Advantage with a few more perks.
So to answer your question, the plan F is actually a supplement to Medicare. Which is Medicare Advantage is a different product, different Medicare product that United American does not offer. So this is a, this requires the beneficiary to enroll in original Medicare Parts A and B, whereas Medicare Advantage is Part C. And Medicare essentially under Part C contracts with various insurance companies to provide coverage for Medicare services. But that is a different program within Medicare than a supplement, which supplements Medicare Parts A and B. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for the explanation.
Okay, I have a question, and might just be me, but under the active members and then the added members and the canceled members, I can't seem to balance out. If you take 12,
the reason for yes, the reason that the numbers don't balance out is really due to timing differences. between each of those categories. So we take a snapshot of the number of active members within a month, but then there's activity within the month. And depending on when that coverage is in effect or when the cancellation takes effect, there are timing differences that cause the balance, that cause the numbers not to balance out.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else have any questions or comments? Jason, do y'all have anything else? I left anything else out?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Looks good.
We appreciate your time and we appreciate the report. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you, Derek. Thank you, Brenda.
You're welcome.
Thank you all.
Have a good afternoon.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Okay, so next, shall we move back up to item 9, which is a single federal audit? That's Mr. McIntosh.
I think just to do a high-level review of the Government Programs Department audit, which is part of the general fund, the governmental government and contract funds, and as well as the internal service fund, which the internal service fund is our self-insured health employee benefit fund. So basically that's what that audit compiles. It does not have the component units or the proprietary and enterprise, which would be WELA, Tribal Works, Tax Commission, Fitness Center, and there's a one or two other. I'll need to look at that. But we may have put them under the general. So in relation to that, each year you, as part of receiving federal awards and what you receive above a certain threshold of federal awards, you're required to do a single A-133 audit that's due essentially June 30th of every year for fiscal year end dates. September 30th, 2021 was our fiscal year end date. We did turn in the audit. The single audit was submitted on time. So we did get that in on time. I think to just do a high level review of the audit itself, as the auditors typically come and present it once the tribe-wide's completed. I think just to kind of hit a high-level review is essentially that for governmental programs, the tribe total net position came out to $275,570,417. Typically, I know that, like I said, a high-level review, there'll be just some discussions of the fund balance in regards to general fund. And as discussed, I think that when we see that the unassigned fund balance is showing a negative $1.316 million, to go further into that, we'll need to go into the committed schedule. And then part of what's offsetting that was the prior year when the master campus plan had been paid off, the money had been drawn down to cover that, but the dollars are still sitting in the 1,000 general fund. They need to be transferred to the long-term debt fund because we're carrying a negative fund balance there. That's where the debt was paid. So once that occurs in 22, and the legislation was out there for all that to support that should have occurred, once we correct that in 22, that's when the unassigned at the end of 22 will be more reflecting truer positive balances. But I'll provide more information and a better schedule to kind of explain that when the auditors present the audit. But that is something that kind of came about during this audit of finding and identifying what caused that. It was the same reason, I think, in what you, or when we looked back at the 2019 audit. We had the negative, I think, $3.5 million unassigned balance. Well, it was this negative long-term debt fund balance is offsetting what would have been a positive fund balance. So if you think about that, with that long-term debt, fund balance, showing a negative fund balance of $4 million, showing unassigned here at the end of this year is 1.3. It kind of says we were $3 million to the good for the year. That, otherwise, the unassigned would be a negative $4 million with what the long-term debt would show. So it can be kind of alarming when you see that number, but thinking through it, and once we resolve that fund balance of that debt, which it all rolls up into the general fund, but I'll leave it at that. Okay. For now.
Chair, I have a question real quick.
Congresswoman Rebard.
Okay, thank you. So you discussed the single audit real quick, and then you jumped into the government-wide?
No, this is still just the
single. You're still just talking about the single.
So typically the single audit,
it's federal.
It goes hand in hand with the general fund and the government and contracts all at one time. So the single audit's performed when this governmental audit's done. And then the tribe-wide audit is after this was submitted, we go through like Osage Properties, we go through their balance sheets and income statements. And they also, that's when they go out and we get gaming's, you know, financial statements, LLC's financial statements, and they put it all together.
We add all those components?
Yeah, add all the components. That's what's considered the tribe-wide because it encompasses kind of the full umbrella of the tribe.
Okay, well, I have a question, Chair. In looking at the audits, I guess, so I'll give you an example. We just purchased land in Missouri, you know, for gaming purposes, but of course it's not in trust. That, of course, as we all know, takes a lot of time. So it's sitting there as fee simple land. And so I'm sure the deed would be in the name of the nation. So is that piece of land sitting on our balance sheet as an asset under the nation at this time?
That's where I would probably have to get the details of those documents and read through them to make that determination.
With all of our fee simple lands where, you know, they're booked as an asset.
Right.
So is that reflected in the audit?
The 21 audit or the upcoming 22? Didn't we just buy the land this year?
Either one. I'm just, yeah. I use the Missouri as an example. So any of the land that we've purchased, I guess, last year?
Yeah, I mean, we identify all land purchases and capitalize those. So if we did buy the land and it wasn't bought from one of our governmental funds, we would show that as a governmental asset. Now, at the time that it comes in trust, then that's where I probably need to read more into how we transfer that out potentially to gaming, or is that something that gaming purchased, and is it going to fall on their asset list? Those are some of the questions in determining how to record it.
So, and Chair, if I may, that's something that I've, you know, been wanting to dive in on the audits and kind of talk more about, or is the asset piece of it. So say the ranch had bought, I think, some additional land, the LLC, and then, of course, gaming, you know, we had bought some property. I don't know if the LLC or ones. Well, I know ones had a building at one time, and then they sold it. And so I was just wondering, so you have these components inside of the audit. Are we capturing all of their assets as well as our own? I'm just talking about fee simple.
Yeah.
Like the Lost Creek Ranch.
So the way, I guess, to define the word we would be?
The nation.
The nation. Now, within that, that's where I see the nation. This and then, so an example, the LLC, the gaming, all those component units produce their own financials. So if they bought those land, or that they purchased that land, that would be on their books and in their assets. And then essentially in the tribe-wide audit, it would be in the nation's audit. But it wouldn't be in the nation's audit in the governmental audit.
Okay, so let's use an example, if I may, Chair. Another one. Lost Creek Ranch was purchased with the nation's dollars, tribal dollars, and then the Osage LLC is now leasing that property to manage it, but that asset would be carried on our books.
That's my understanding, that the tribe itself bought the land and is in an agreement to lease that out to the ranch to operate on. And that type of, yes, to that, the land is owned by the nation, would be on our assets. Now, if the ranch went out and bought a tractor or some additional land, that would be in their books as an asset to them.
Because of the lease?
Because that they're Section 14, or the LLC is a Section 14, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a component unit. So their books are separate from our governmental books. And they, you, there's a little different accounting approaches. So in the governmental side, where we're talking that the tribe itself makes the purchase of the land, then in this governmental for GASB, I recognize that full purchase price in that year. It stays in the financial at the full price. But I go over here in a capital asset fund and I recognize it and I depreciate it over here, but the depreciation never hits the actual financials in the government side. Now, when you start talking components, Section 14s, so if the ranch goes out and buys a vehicle, you have to account for that just like you would kind of normal business. Hey, they bought a $30,000 vehicle, which probably can't nowadays, but you bought a $30,000 vehicle, we're going to depreciate that over 6 years, $5,000 a year. So when they make that purchase and $30,000 hits in the expense, you back it off of the statement of revenue and expenditures and take it to a cap asset on the balance sheet, and then you bring back depreciation back into that book. So when you talk component units and cap assets, it's different than talking governmental cap assets and treatments. But at the end of the day, when you get the tribe-wide audit, all those assets will be accounted for, if that makes sense.
Yes, Chair, if I may. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about in those components. So I guess I'm looking, you know, big picture about all the assets that the nation owns and where they're identified, mm-hmm. and they should be captured in the audit.
Yes.
So let's talk about the cattle. That's an asset, right?
Yes.
So that would be carried on the nation's books. Well, like the CARES cattle would be carried on our books. The buffalo would be carried on our books.
I'm getting into those details to determine the treatment
of
those.
What cow?
Which ones were bought with which. And yeah, because there's, you know, I think that my understanding is that, yes, there was cattle purchased by the tribe. And then, of course, the ranch itself was purchasing cattle, right? Mm-hmm. So it's discussion of, yeah, to me, those would be different assets if you treat them as assets. Now, whether or not you really treat that as an asset, you know, in typical farm, yes, cattle is typically an asset. Depending on the true purpose of buying the cattle, is it more of a supply?
Okay.
Or
like the CARES cattle. Oh, sorry, Chair.
You know, yeah, well, do you buy a supply of cattle to basically butcher to feed people?
Right.
That's not an asset, right? That's more of a resource that you're using.
Like a direct service.
Kind of in a sense. It's more of a operation, you know, it's not. So a lot of times
it's
when you get in that cap, there's a lot of detail you got to look at in the purchase and the intent and everything behind it before you just slap it, cap asset, kind of. And we can kind of get into that as I'll go kind of through and we the audit of where we're at and what we're doing in those areas of cap assets. And I think we're moving in the right direction.
Good.
Mm-hmm. But good questions.
So if I may, Chair.
Yes.
I think so. Sorry, last year in our 20 audit, if I'm looking at the right one, I apologize. I think I'm looking at the, hold on, I'll tell you, I'm sorry. Just for instance, I think I'm looking at the government-wide. So if we wanted to, you know, let our people know where we are, it looks like we had capital assets, land and construction around $94 million, and then capital assets around $65 million. And I'm sorry if you didn't bring that. I'm just looking as, I guess, as you to educate me a little bit. So if we're talking to our folks, and I know our audits are provided on our website, but when we're talking to our folks about where we are, then that, you know, one of the goals would be to increase our assets, particularly our land base and right. things of that nature. So I was just wondering,
you on page 4? Looks like
I was. I was just curious as to where we were with our assets and wanted to have you explain, you know, an example that I'm thinking, like the Lost Creek Ranch, that would be sitting on our books when we purchased, I think back in 2021.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where I would say that I would typically have to read the information to make that determination.
Okay.
But I assume that it would be
on our books. And right. even though we're leasing it to another entity, it'd still be listed as an asset to us.
I believe
an asset to us and an expense as to who we lease it to.
Yeah, I believe that it is on our assets.
Okay.
So a little bit of what we have going on since we're talking about assets and things of that nature. And of course, you review your insurance policy against your cap asset listing. So we're having those meetings, and we're making sure that everything's listed on the insurance policies are covering all of our assets, and we're not missing anything.
Good.
So, and I'll kind of hold back a little bit because it'll be kind of, we did have an additional finding that came out that I was going to address here, and it's related to inventory and cap assets. But to give you an update on why the finding came about, but at the same time tell you where we're at, what we're doing, and we had already started on fixing this in this current year. So as of today, I can say on that finding, I feel confident that it should be removed at the end of this year. We've got a new cap asset manager working in place. He was the former assistant controller. He kind of jumped over to build that department. We've already sent out kind of a to verify our full cap asset sets, our full capital asset list, we've sent out to all directors to verify whether or not they still have those assets or not. So we've already met one measure of taking away the finding. The other thing we're taking is we're taking it off Excel sheets, and we're actually putting it into the asset management software we have to where you can manage it. So just in our meeting this last week, we've already that department, Mr. Armstrong's already, we already have pictures of tractors, we already have pictures of vehicles, we have data, we're building that asset, you can go in there and find the picture of it, get all the historical information you need, so we're building that up with the expectation that, you know, by September 30th, that's how we maintain our assets, and at the same time, we're bleeding in and working more between procurement in that area, too, to do some upfront management training on identifying when assets come across to be procured, add a signal and how that should trigger and eventually get to that asset management area, because we want to capture it the day it lands here on our on campus. Once we do have it, then we need to record it into our cap asset log. And that's where we're at. And I feel that, you know, when we get through the next audit, the finding we have and the actions that we're taking moving forward will resolve that. So it's very valid. Those have been cap assets was finding in 19 and 20. They kind of stepped off in 20, but kind of due to the fact that we couldn't provide where we did an actual inventory or provide documents that an inventory was done in 19 or 20, then that's why we got the finding. Or actually, let me excuse myself. Inventory was not done in 20 or 21. Now, part of that, COVID, you're out half the year in 20. There was a individual in that position when I came in, but I think as of July 21 of last year, it went vacant. So there were efforts being made to try to get that done, but now I think we're in the position we need to be capturing that information, dealing with it as soon as it shows up, and getting those answers and having those answers so we treat it properly.
Wonderful. Thank you, Chair. I like to, you know, I think a lot of times we think capital assets, we think about construction projects. For whatever reason, you know, that's the name of the revolving fund and things of that nature. But when I say capital assets, I think, you know, a capital asset like land and, you know.
I think for a policy, anything over $5,000, you know.
Exactly.
Not a service, but it's, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you. That was my question, Chair, and thank you, Tyler.
Okay, if there's nothing else on that topic, we'll move on to item number 10, 2021 government-wide audit.
That's a short probably answer. I'm fine. We'll be providing them their final fund analysis this week, and then we should be on a wrap-up at that point. Okay. So we should have that audit hopefully by the end of next week, if not the next week. We'll have the tribe-wide audit. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point in time is when retained revenue and all that's to be presented within 2 weeks of that date,
okay,
if I recall.
So does that put us back on our time frame for everything?
We would be back to working actually in a current year. And I said, this is a good feeling not to be, you know, working in fiscal year 22, working on fiscal year 20 and 21, but actually getting to the point now where we can actually work on current information. And as I said, you know, the team itself, I can only compliment them. They've been pushed hard over the last 12 months, and they're responding. So I commend them. But we're making good progress. We finished that June 30th audit, and then we rode straight into trying to do a soft close at June 30, 2022. So the gas pedal has been full throttle, but we're getting close to, you know, being on cruise control.
Congratulations. Thank you. Any questions or comments on government-wide audit? The report will be coming later.
Madam Chair.
Congresswoman Shaw.
I know you said congratulations already, but definitely congratulations to you and your team. It feels very good, even from these seats, to know that that's where we are. So good job.
Okay, if there's nothing else on that, we'll move on to item 11, IDC. Mr. McIntosh.
Yeah, it's going to be probably another short conversation. The IDC has been kind of an ongoing. We were setting and had provided the 21 and the 22 proposals together, I think, as reported back in April.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, since then, there's been some legislation that changed kind of the pool and the base, really more the base for 22. So I'm circling back. I've worked through 1 year of it. I should be completing the 22 year and getting those submitted within this week. So I've got a lot still to do, but my goal is to get those rates in place by September 30th. At least that way we can true up our IDC, you know, look at having a current rate in the current year for the first time in a few years, and then start on the 23 rate to get it in place by mid-year, hopefully, of next year, and actually have current rates to look at in the current years we're operating in. Now, I think in kind of the initial discussion from last year that my question, I guess, if I can propose a question, professional fees, tribal. You know, last year we not allowed to charge IDC on professional fees on the tribal side. Now I'm putting that in the proposal. And same, you know, that we did charge it on federal. And the reason I bring that up is it's, I don't like charging federal programs to say it costs me more to cut a check for them because I'm charging on more cost lines of their professional fees, recouping more money, and saying that it doesn't cost me the same amount of money because I'm not recouping on professional fees on the tribal side. So I would ask that I'm preparing budgets on the tribal side and calculating IDC against them. So I don't know if we discuss that here or, but I don't want to prepare budgets and have to rework budgets. And
that decision was not made here, if I remember.
Yeah, that chair, if I may, that was presented to us that there was a multiple method being used that was negotiated. But what we later found out that it wasn't approved.
Right.
And so, you know, if you guys choose to use a multi-method or a multiple method to calculate IDC, that's up to you.
Right.
But we just want to make sure that you're using one that's been approved and that it's consistent and we know what to expect. I think we talked about this in depth last time, or last 2 years that I'm aware of. You know, I don't want IDC to be a driver because it also takes away from our direct services that we, you know, serve our folks when we're charging IDC, you know, on multiple items. Just because we can doesn't mean we should.
Right.
Do I agree with that? No. I don't agree with your analogy on some of that. However, I do agree that you're looking big picture in that we're now, because of the CC OPEJA being in place, that you've lost a lot of IDC dollars. But remember, those are recoveries. They're not really, you know, they're programs to offer a service, but I don't want that to be your nucleus, your driver as to why you charge things, because at the end of the day, it costs our people.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I like that you pay attention to it. I mean, IDC fluctuates, you know, we know that. And, but I understand why you would consider doing that multiple method. But I'm just glad to hear that you're getting caught up with our IDC negotiations, you know, because we can't do that until an audit's complete. So I appreciate that we're getting current now. And so that's all that I have to say. And thank you for giving us that update.
We'll try to have at least that information or how it's looking. I think hopefully by the time that the September session rolls around, that we have at least a tentative, we're in the ballpark here, you know, if it's not final settled.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions or comments on IDC? Okay, if not, we'll move on to item 15, which is board stipends. Mr. Zahn, are you here? Could someone give him a call, please? Okay, thank you. We'll give him a minute.
Chair, so we don't have silence, I can talk a little bit about the budget for the board stipends if you'd like.
Okay.
So in the law, I think it's the Boards and Commissions Act, we set these stipends every odd year for some reason. And so I think Congresswoman Shaw set the last stipend, the resolution, in 21. And so now for 23, we have to, you know, set that stipend or they can't create a budget for the boards. So I've notified Trey that I'd sponsor that resolution. And so I appreciate that you're adding it to the agenda because I did have a question for Jason whenever he gets on the call about the amount of the stipends.
Got a memory alert a while ago, and I guess now it's just not letting me. Oh, it's closing stuff out.
We'll turn the sound off.
Well, okay.
That's what I get.
Okay, there we go. Thank you.
The chairs, Jason on the line.
Said he was going to log back in, so maybe he wasn't in his office.
Well, since it's almost four, can I just maybe ask my question to Tyler?
Yes.
Thank you, ma'am. So, Tyler, I was wondering if the executive consider giving an increase of board stipend because of the inflation that we were experiencing. And the reason I say that is to me, it would be justifiable because we've, you know, given an increase to our judges, our chiefs, to Congress. And I just feel like we need to look at things that we're able to set. We gave a COLA to our employees, and I just wanted to know if executive had even considered that. And I would like for them to reach out to the gaming board to ask them for their board budget this year. Typically, the gaming folks pay for their own cost. But what I read in the law is that...
Okay. All right, sure. Hold on a second. Okay, you're on speaker now.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that.
Okay, Jody was just in the middle of asking a question. Let's let her do that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay, Jason. I'll be real quick. I just asked Tyler. I was wondering if executive would consider giving an increase to the boards in their stipends because of the inflation. And the reason I mentioned that is because we've given an increase to our judges, the chiefs, Congress, employees. And I was just wondering if that's something you would consider. And then I've agreed to sponsor the resolution to set the stipends. And I was wondering if you could work with me on that. And then also, would you ask the gaming board to provide us with a board budget? I know that in the past, I don't know how many years, it hasn't been all the time, but they're usually excluded by an asterisk in the resolution. But this year, I'd like to include them.
Did you catch all that, Jason?
I didn't quite get the last part. I heard about I haven't talked with Chief about any increases in the board stipends. I haven't discussed that with him. I have heard others talk about it, but I haven't talked directly with him about it. But I would only imagine if we have board members that have absorbed, or, you know, we have LLCs that have absorbed other boards that are doing that work alongside their initial board, I would only imagine that an increase would be appropriate if that's what the committee agrees with. I don't know if Tyler's still on, but I know Tyler was putting together the board budgets just based on the previous, the current resolution that we have. Obviously, we have to do one for FY23, but we were just following the amounts from 2022.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
That does, but she had the last part of her question was requesting that the gaming board provide a board budget this year.
Oh, I did not, since I think the last year or so that they paid their own stipends. But I had not, I guess is my answer.
Okay, well, the board budget would be a little different. And so, yes, I guess she's wanting that request to go through to the executive. Jody?
Yes, well, typically I think Jason's office is the one that manages getting the board budgets together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's a request to you to get a budget from the board, gaming board.
For their stipends?
No, just a budget, operating budget.
Oh, an operating budget for the gaming enterprise board as a whole?
Yes.
Okay. Which would include their stipends,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Just like every other board.
Just like the other boards. Yeah. Okay.
I can do that.
Okay. Do we have any direct questions for Jason regarding stipends, or did we want to, are we proposing anything at this point or just reviewing?
We have nothing, Chair, we don't have anything to present at this time. I just wanted to get
that conversation going.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right, so I guess that's it, Jason, unless anybody else has anything they want to add to it. Not hearing anything. Okay, so I guess that's it, just that request, and then start those discussions with about the resolution.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Okay, believe it or not, that takes us to adjournment.
Motion to adjourn. Second.
Motion and second to adjourn, and we are adjourned. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. It was a long meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Tyler.